The Carmichael Dave Show.
He's on the microphone when he's not on the microphone. He's playing a song, and when he's not playing a song, he's on the microphone, and then boom!
With Jason Ross.
No, he didn't! Yes, he did!
Call or text at 916-339-1140.
It's the Carmichael Dave Show with Jason Ross on Sacktown Sports.
Thursday at 8, halfway through. That means one thing and one thing only, though. My brother in Great Clips, the one, the only, the lovely, the talented, Sam Amick of The Athletic. Good morning, Samuel.
Good morning, gentlemen. Did Domas get you to keep dropping all these Great Clip references, Dave? Is that what happened?
Domas?
He's got a sponsorship with Great Clip.
Oh, I didn't know that. Hey. Well, then, even better. Now that Domas, Sam, myself. By the way, how do you and I not have sponsorships? Domas has one.
Let's go.
That's right.
Here's a plug, kind of indirectly. I'll just plug the company you work for. But during the break, and we'll get to this later, by the way, Fabian Ardaya, a baseball writer for The Athletic. I was just reading. He has the latest on the Shohei Ohtani scandal going on right now. And there's a couple of revelations in there that we sadly and sorely need to go over. But just illustrating, you know, your Athletic subscription. Obviously, we're talking to Sam. We're going to talk basketball. During this interview, we're going to reference an interview that his colleague Anthony Slater had with Malik Monk. And then you've got baseball. So I'll do the plug at the beginning rather than the end. Hey, it's cheap. It's effective. It's great journalism. It's easy to curate what you want. I have a list of my favorite writers, so that way it shows up on the front page all the time. I only wrote one down. It was Sam. But still, I have that page. And there you go, Sam. Pretty good. Did it right? I saw you took your glasses off.
Yeah, I'm just going to go blind today. Yeah. We're going blind. No, that was good. I'm sure your employers love all the free advertising you're giving out today.
We got to work to try to get you on. Here's my first question.
Yep.
I want to talk about just about Anthony Slater's article on Malik Monk. And we went over this yesterday, and I'm paraphrasing, but at the end of the article, Malik said something like, when asked by Anthony, are you going to stay in Sacramento or do you want to? Monk said something like, depends on the postseason. I want to see how we do in the postseason, but I love it here. The fans love me. I love the fans, yada, yada, yada. I'd love to stay here. And Sam, I don't want to be drama guy. And it's like Malik has done everything but say, I'm staying here for sure. But help me out here. Anthony did a great job of going through and laying out all the money parameters. Malik and his agent have known since the beginning of the year, probably since before the year started, exactly what the Kings can offer, exactly what they can't offer, and the only unknown is what other teams will offer. So even based on what he just said, am I right to be incredibly worried that the Kings, through no fault of their own, could very easily lose Malik if a Philly, if a San Antonio, somebody comes in with, 20 a year and a guaranteed starting job? Or am I being too dramatic?
No, I don't. And I'll preface this by saying, this is informed speculation, just like you. So I don't want to make Kings fans freak out. But that calculus and the way you laid it out, I think, is fair. I do think, and I know it's been analyzed a lot after that story came out, but there's a couple layers to it, right? Like the six-man role and his, candor regarding the fact that he doesn't like it, but he is willing to do it on this team. Like, that factor matters, because he didn't outright say, I want to be a starter starting next year no matter what.
Right.
But, but it would have been better for Kings fans' purposes if he was like, oh, my God, I want to be the next, Manu Ginobili, Andre Iguodala. He didn't say that. The money stuff is a big deal. Because when you're talking about a deal where I think his next max from the Kings, correct me if I'm wrong, but would be around 17.
Yeah, 17.4, I think, is what it was.
Yeah, I mean, in today's NBA, for a guy that brings as much as he does, the market could very easily be above that. It just could. And then you have a guy who, think about it this way, and this will probably make Kings fans feel even worse. Think about the way the beginning of his career went, and a lot of the money that he left on the table during that stretch, because he had his rookie scale deal. Now he's signing a minimum with the Lakers. That's not, the way a young player would like his financial career to go in the NBA. You know, ideally you sign a big deal after that rookie deal. So he's already behind the eight ball from that standpoint. And again, I know we're talking about a ton of money, no matter who it is.
Sure.
But so, yeah, I think it's fair to be a little worried. And I think the playoff comment that he made lastly is on point, because I think for all of them, it's going to be a fascinating offseason to see where the mood is after the playoffs. And by the way, not to just keep going down the dark road, they're playing pretty well lately. They just, I mean, I looked at it right now. It's like they're right there on the play-in. Like the idea of them falling short of the playoffs is still a scenario that's in play. So a lot of stakes, you know, and he's an incredibly important player for what they do.
On the list of things, it feels like, Sam, the only thing that the Kings can tweak in their positive, I mean, they've got the lead, let's say, because he's here. He seems to like it here. He's played well here. He's one of the front runners, if not the front runner, to win a pretty prestigious award in the league. But the one thing that it feels like they can, I don't know if you could quote unquote promise, but what about that starting position? How much do you think that could move the needle? Because you're right. I mean, if Orlando, Detroit, who is it, San Antonio, Philly, offers that much more, and he already feels he's a little behind in the financial game, missing out on one more year is kind of a big deal. So what do you think they could do in regards to that, and how much do you think that could move the needle for a guy like Malik Monk?
I mean, I don't think that would move. I think that he's a smart enough basketball guy to know that I actually think in with this roster, he is best used off the bench. And I think, you know, like the hypothetical that comes to mind is, you know, if the Kings front office went to Mike Brown and said, hey, we got to have him, you know, be in the starting lineup, I think Mike, you know, would be concerned about what the ceiling would be for that group, because it's Malik's playmaking with the second unit, you know, because you're not always with Fox and Sabonis, who are going to have that ball in their hands a ton. Like, I think you take away some of Malik's superpower if you put him in the backcourt alongside De'Aaron. And I think defensively, you would have issues. Now, you know, Kevin Huerter obviously got hurt and was never considered an above average defender. But now with Keon Ellis and kind of what he's been able to do, like, the defense remains an issue that they're trying to work on. I don't think Fox and Monk side by side, I think the rest of the league would say, oh, that's great. You know, let's attack the rim. And Fox has gotten a lot better on that end too. But so I guess all I'm saying is it goes down to what Malik thinks of the Kings situation, because I think they might take a step back if they put him in the starting lineup.
And not necessarily, Sam, I'm not trying to counter what you said. I don't disagree with it. But what gave me pause, and you referenced this, I've got the quote in front of me now from Anthony's article. When he asked Malik about starting and whether or not he enjoyed coming off the bench, Malik's quote was, hell no. Hell no, I don't like it. But S word, it's what I got to do for us to win and play better. So I just take the role head on. Now, again, we can translate whatever. Maybe he's saying, yeah, I want to start, but hey, this is how I'm helping the team and I'm all for it and it's not an issue. But man, you could also read that the other way of like, I'm doing this year in a contract year because they took a chance on me and gave me the 2-year, $18 million deal, but I ain't doing this next year. I'm either starting with my Kentucky guy in the backcourt, or I'm, you know, I can start on a bunch of other teams. I just don't know which way to go with it.
Yeah, I hear you, but I think then it becomes a different conversation for the Kings, which is look at all the possible backcourt mates for De'Aaron Fox, and at that point it becomes, you know, is Malik, let's say the market goes all the way up to 25, which would be a ton.
Yeah.
You know, is Malik Monk the ideal guy to give $25 million to a year for the Kings' purposes? I don't know that he is. I just don't. I mean, my God, Slater had some good detail in the article, and it was a great story, but let's not forget, like, Mike Brown having to tell Malik Monk, hey, you've played over 1,000 minutes and you've never taken a charge. Like, you know, that part has gotten better. But it's, you know, this is pro sports, right? Like, we judge athletes a lot of times within the context of their contract. Brock Purdy is, you know, a success story because he's making $900,000, you know, when he's making $30 million, everybody's going to look at him differently. Malik is going to be in a similar boat. And the Kings, I think, have to look at that, because for this role, coming off the bench, being the spark plug, I know for a fact Mike Brown absolutely loves the way that he can bring him in with the closing lineup and show the opponent something late in the game that they haven't seen for most of the game. It gives them a unique wrinkle that he likes. And I think if it becomes about a starting backcourt mate, then, I mean, they're going to be somewhat limited in their ability to go get somebody else. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think at that point, you might have to bring in a few more candidates to make sure that Malik is the guy.
Sam, we've already mentioned a couple teams that do have money, and it's going to turn out to be a pretty decent free agent summer. So kind of with that said, do you think there is a number of teams that would line up for Malik besides the Kings?
I do. You know, Philadelphia is an interesting one because, you know, they obviously made the James Harden trade. They've got a lot of assets, and their strategy the entire time wasn't to strike right away and go replace James Harden. It was to take their time. Tyrese Maxey was going to have room to get better. Obviously, the Joel Embiid injury changed things for them, but it hasn't changed, I don't think, their summer, which is that they're going to be star hunting yet again. They got Daryl Morey from, you know, the Rockets previously. That's what he does. They've been tied to Paul George, who has not got an extension done with the Clippers. You know, Malik, I think, would be in that similar category. Hasn't accomplished as much as Paul, but like a dynamic scorer who could add something to a Sixers team where Joel needs more help. So they come to mind. The one that, and again, clean this up for me, guys, if I misspeak, but like I think Orlando's interesting because they have money. You know, they've been tied to Klay Thompson, who's going to be a free agent this summer. You know, conceivably that would put them in the Malik Monk market as well. So, you know, I think there are teams out there. You know, Orlando's fifth in the East right now, which quietly nobody's really paying attention to. I looked at it today. They're a game behind, like, the Knicks. Everybody rightfully believes have had a really, really strong year, and the Magic are, like, one game behind them. So mm-hmm. A guy like Malik, you know, I could see Orlando being appealing, especially since he appears to like the kind of the small market, slow type vibe that Sacramento has given him. So, again, I'm like Dave said at the top, I do think there is some reason for concern here.
And can I just add, and I know none of us are cap honks, can I just add that you have exactly what the NBA should want? You have a mid-market, small-market team that has built up largely through the draft, even counting trading a draft asset for Domantas Sabonis. It's just asinine to me that Malik Monk is part of the Sacramento Kings, yet the Kings' hands are tied and other teams, in a world where it seems like the Golden State Warriors and Phoenix Suns and LA Lakers can have a $400 million cap and sign like three guys to a max deal, and the Kings are hamstrung on being able to re-sign one of their bench players, and they can only give him $17 million. Sam, that just, I know I'm a purple glasses guy, but that just seems stinky.
Yeah, I mean, I hear you, you know, and okay. I wish I had all the numbers in front of me, but it's like they, you know, they also made a choice to give a Brinks truck to Fox and a Brinks truck to Sabonis. And, you know, and if they had managed their money, and I'm not criticizing, I'm just giving you the reality. If they'd managed their money differently, I mean, they could have set it up in a way where, you know, if they reach this point and Malik, now he's got, it's an option for next year that he's opting out of, right? Or no?
I thought it was a 2-year, $18 million deal. I could be wrong, but I think that's it.
Well, I mean, I guess, since I don't have the numbers in front of me, I won't argue with your premise. I mean, I get it. It's not ideal, and it is going to require, I think, Malik feeling strongly enough about this situation to look beyond just the bottom line. And we'll have to wait and see if that happens.
Sam, I know you've been checking this team out. You mentioned earlier playing better. They are good month of March. They can't really shake free of in the standings at all, but some numbers suggest some improvement defensively. That's been an area that probably has kept many to think that they can do anything. But a lot of it seems like it's tied into someone people wouldn't expect, Keon Ellis, getting put into the lineup with the injury to Kevin Huerter and just getting more minutes lately in the rotation. What do you think about what you're seeing from this team defensively, and are you kind of buying that there's substantial improvement there?
Yeah, it's funny. Right before we hopped on, Jay, you know, I haven't looked at their defensive rating in a while and saw that it was 15th. And it's, I mean, that was the goal really coming into the year for Mike Brown and his staff, was to be top half of the league. I mean, top 10 is something that nobody would have expected or predicted given this roster. Top 15 is pretty good. The obvious, you know, the only downside is that we didn't expect the offense to be 12th. You know, but still, if you look at the defensive side, you give him credit for getting better. Keon, you know, he's just a scrappy, energetic, long, impactful player. And they, you know, I think rightfully realized that you spend most of the season with the offense not clicking like it had before. And the one part people forget is that offense in general, it obviously just went up again this season. The Kings are not as far off from their kind of offensive rate of last season as people believe. They just have fallen down in the rankings because everybody else got better. But, I mean, especially with playoff time around the corner, the idea of having a guy like Keon who can hound perimeter scorers and attack the glass and you know, spark the break, and honestly has hunger because his career is on the line right here. This is a great opportunity for him. I like it. You know, I think it's been a good move by Mike, and obviously it's been made a little, I mean, you feel terrible for Kevin, but they just went from feeling as if he was going to lose his job to Keon anyway, potentially, to, you know, the injury cementing it for now. But it's great for them that they have a guy like Keon there.
Sam Amick joining us from The Athletic. Sam, just a quick aside as we go around the NBA, I'm sure you at least are tangentially aware of the Grizzlies Warriors fracas last night. Draymond Green, I think Santi Aldama, Taylor Hawkins, you know, kind of trips and goes to the floor. Looking at the replays, I'm not going to ask you to predict Joe Dumars' brain, but is there a chance the NBA gets involved here? And as they have before, the previous altercations and incidents clause kicks in with Draymond and he might miss time?
I mean, first of all, buddy, you just made Foo Fighters fans very sad because you have
Thank you for catching that. Taylor Jenkins, sorry.
It's a miracle. He has come back as the
coach. Right. Jeez, thank you for catching that. Okay, everything else but Taylor Jenkins, yes.
Although, as another aside, the Amick family got Foo Fighters tickets the other day, so we're
Look, taking the whole fam?
Mom's not necessarily into it, me and the boys are going to head down for sure.
I'm sure she will be absolutely miserable having a night without all the boys, hanging out and doing, I'm sure she's just going to terribly miss it.
Well, the other, I know I keep rambling on the side. The other hilarious part for me is it'll be about 18 hours. It's August 13th. It's about 18 hours after I get back from having been, in Europe for 32 days. So I'm sure I'm going to be like energetic and ready to rock. So that'll be fun.
Couple quick things.
Yeah.
Number one, that was
a flex.
That was a really good, solid, like, he flexed, but like, here's the thing. He inserted the flex into a very salient point he was making about a concert that we only got onto because I made a mistake about a guy's name. So that was like A-level flexing.
Right.
32 days in Europe. I got to imagine this is your sister, and you're doing the Europe thing again probably?
We're doing it for a couple weeks, but then the family will fly home, and then it's off to cover the Olympics. So it's a combo trip. We're just going to keep flexing here, Dave.
Yet another great flex, but not really because I asked, and he's given a normal answer. Hey, if you're over there and you want to see a preseason soccer match, I got you.
Hey, let's go.
You know, you just got to drive to Yorkshire, Northern England, about 3.5 hours north of London, if you can do that. You can go see York, Liverpool, Manchester, and then stop in Old Huddersfield and watch a match.
Is that your flex?
Now we're completely derailed. I'm going to hook you up with my sister who lives in Sheffield, buddy, because I don't think that's that far from where you're talking about.
No, I don't think so, but I'm married, Sam, as you know, and have a wife. You've met her.
Jeez. What is happening here?
It's so awkward. Wow.
Anyway. Okay, so Taylor Jenkins.
Yes.
Who's it say Swift?
Go ahead. And then Dave Grohl came from the top row. Taylor Jenkins, you know, that's the only part where I think I wonder if the NBA might do something, because I actually thought the telecast, and if anybody didn't see it, you know, like Draymond and Saldana, Santi, can't say his name. They get into it. Desmond Bane's the one who pushes Draymond, but it kind of doesn't matter. Right? You know, Draymond is the initial spark, like is the case most of the time. Then, but I mean, Taylor hits the deck pretty hard, and I guess was like holding his knee a little bit afterwards. You know, looked like one of those I've fallen and I can't get up commercials.
Right.
So that's the part where, from an NBA standpoint, when I saw it, my thought was, even if he's fine, like, geez, man, the optics of, you know, a head coach trying to argue with the ref, and he can't even argue with the ref without getting barreled over, is not great. You know, Draymond seemed to calm it down pretty quickly and went back to Desmond Bane and said whatever he had to say to kind of end it. The initial ref, I don't know who was standing right there. It was a mistake not to tee Draymond up initially when he's pushing, you know, Aldama the way that he did. Like, that's why the Grizzlies then felt the need to come back and say, we're not going to let you push our guy around. So not a huge deal, but not great.
I know the league won't do anything about this, but maybe the team will. Dave showed me the clip earlier. Should the Clippers fine James Harden for playing defense on offense, if you saw the clip, Sam?
I didn't see it.
What happened? My God, are you serious?
So both of us hadn't seen it.
You had, Sam, shame on you. As a matter of fact, we're going to do something here. Sam, I need you to pull out your phone. Just go on Twitter, open up Twitter, and just search in the search bar. Just search Harden. This is how you'll find it very easily. I need you to watch this live on the air
Get his reaction.
It's honestly one of the craziest things I've ever seen in the NBA. I actually think it's the very top thing. Kevin DeGondi posted it. I don't know if you see that or not.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Okay.
What the hell?
He claimed, you know, the team had been in a fog. He was trying to lift up spirits. He did not block Kawhi's shot. He looked like he sure attempted to.
Dude. What is wrong with your guy, man?
I mean, and the tweet says it all, that it does look like a video game glitch where your fingers clips.
That worked out better than I thought, Dave. His reaction, what the?
Like, that's why I don't like playing 2K, is because I'll be running down the court and I'll just start jumping, you know.
All right. Yeah. Is that the best defense James Harden's ever played?
I want to know, like, on the NBA analytics, does that go in the category of, like, a Kawhi Leonard contested three?
Yeah.
And we were talking about this, too. Like, what if James had blocked it? Does he get the block?
Yeah.
Also, what if James blocked it into, like, the fifth row and just came down into the crotch chopped it? Does he get teed? There's all kinds of fun stuff here.
I mean, geez.
Have you ever seen anything like that?
The gambling implications?
Right. Yeah, exactly. Well, that was the thing, is that James Harden's interpreter had the under. I don't know, man. He is a, as I said before, I respect the fact that he's a first ballot Hall of Famer, and he is, and he should be. I will raise a glass of champagne when he retires. He's just the most unethical basketball player I've ever seen in my life. Did you know this, Sam? Did you know James Harden actually has more free throws made than field goals?
I did not.
Yeah, there's your stat of the day. So anyways, how are you?
I'm good. Did you know that Domas is going to break? How long is the record for double-doubles?
It's, what, 55, and he's at 53,
well,
I think? Or?
Yeah. He's at 51. I think it's 53. That's the modern era. But technically, Wilt has like 200.
But he was going up against, you know, let's be a Sears Roebuck stalker. Yeah. And
I mean, it always the plumbers that take the shade.
I know. I don't know. Why can't be a roofer? One of them people that the gutter cleaners.
Accountants.
Yes. Anyways, yeah. He's
an interpreter.
He's too off, Sam. But not an all-star.
But why does Wilt's not count? What am I missing here?
I don't know. It's like the NBA-ABA merge. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. It should count, but right. He's at like 220-something.
Yeah. I mean, I joked with somebody yesterday. I took personal blame for Domas not getting on the All-Star team. If you remember that interview that we had, it, like, I published it, I think, 3 hours before the coaches' votes deadline was supposed to be in. And I just look back at that. And I know I pivoted hard to Domas, but my God, the idea that this guy couldn't get on the All-Star team is wild.
Yeah.
Can't believe. The clown hair is going on now?
Yeah, I'm wearing your hat, Sam, for publishing that article.
You won't get that at Great Clips.
Well, I'm not saying that the Wilt thing doesn't count, but Sabonis's is more impressive. Like, dude, you're 7'4" playing in an age.
He wasn't that
tall. Or 7'1" playing in an age where, like, I mean, has anybody ever looked at old clips? We talk about this of like Bob Cousy dribbling.
I'm not sitting here for the Wilt slander. Is great. You the fact that you just said that something he did is more impressive than Wilt. I don't think I'm going to let that fly.
You think that. I'm going to put it like this. If Domantas Sabonis played in the era Wilt played, he would actually have 83 triple-doubles in a full year, in 82 years. Like, I don't know. That's a whole different hour, though, Sam, right? And we'll never know the answer.
Suddenly, right. I have a weird urge to have a snow cone. I don't know why.
Those are the best ones, the rainbow ones. You used to get after Little League, right? You guys have that?
Sure.
You go to the snack bar after your game and you get a snow cone? No? They do that in Pleasanton?
They do. Okay. They do.
All right. Amick joining us. World traveling, Sam.
Yes.
Just to recap, James Harden's a weirdo. Malik Monk may or may not come back. Sam's going to be in Europe for a month, then go to the Foo Fighters. Watch that jet lag, dude. It's a B.
I know. It's part of your life now, right?
Part of my life, but I won't be covering the Olympics or nothing. But good for you, dude. Somehow. Oh, you're going for the Team USA, right?
Correct.
Are you staying on a boat?
Sherlock Holmes over here.
All right.
I'm staying at a place in Lille, because I don't know if you guys have heard, the basketball is actually like 2.5 hours away from Paris for most of the time. So I will get to know the small town of Lille very well, up near Belgium.
Okay, that's Sam Amick, and he'll be doing live check-ins from Lille, France, and the Olympics. We just closed that deal. Sam, appreciate you. Say hi to the fam. Talk to you soon.
Thanks, guys.
All right,
thank you.
That's Samuel Amick of The Athletic. We'll take a break when we come back. Speaking of The Athletic, let's get into the Shohei Ohtani story again, and this thing just gets fish. This thing's so fishy, it's like an ocean. What? No? Okay. We'll take a break. We'll come back with that next.
Carmichael Dave.
He has very good sources, and he just kind of tells it as it is and gets to the point.
Jason Ross.
He has a lot of pretty smart things to say.
He's good at what he does.
On Sactown Sports.
Hey, thanks, Sam. Thanks for joining us, pal.
Absolutely.
That's Sam Amick. So Ohtani thing. Now, we're just under an hour away, by the way, from the kickoff, tip-off.
Yeah.
First pitch of the NCAA tournament. And we'll obviously update you on that throughout. Make sure you get your brackets in. The Ohtani thing, though, is just starting and is going to grow. It's one of those stories that you hear and you go, Matt, wow, that's a big deal. And then you go, wow, we're going to be talking about this for a while. Mm-hmm. There's the more you read about this thing, the more it smells. In case you missed it, Shohei Ohtani's longtime interpreter was fired by the Dodgers for allegedly stealing $4.5 million from Ohtani to pay off gambling debts. Ohtani's representatives accused the interpreter of engaging in a massive theft, using the player's money to place bets with an allegedly illegal bookmaker under federal investigation. But when you look deeper, the way it rolled out, let's just start in the ninth inning. I think it was the ninth inning. There's video of Ohtani and his interpreter laughing and joking and talking in the dugout. These guys have been friends a long time. They're incredibly close. There's been articles written about how indispensable the interpreter has been, Mizuhara, to Ohtani. Hand in hand. They go everywhere together, do everything together. I don't know for nothing, Jason. I don't know if you and I are that close. We're certainly pretty close. We've known each other a long time. If I found out you or you found out I had done anything remotely like that, I can't imagine knowing that I was going to, let's just say I'm the bad guy, I stole the money from you, because that's, people would believe that more. And I know that at 10 a.m. I got to release a statement and then Cage to Case firing me. I can't imagine the 9 a.m. hour is going to be happy, laughy giggles, mm-hmm. except for Chris, who would be having a ball with yes, the whole thing. So you start there on the timeline. Immediately after the game, Mizuhara, the translator, stood in front of an unsuspecting clubhouse, I'm reading from the article now, and addressed the news that would be public the following the news that was going to break. Apparently, it was a brief meeting, came together abruptly. It was described by sources in the room as weird and strange. It included Dodgers owner Mark Walter and CEO Stan Kasten. Inside the room, Mizuhara told a version of the story similar to what he told ESPN in his initial interview, that he ran up a gambling debt and that Shohei Ohtani covered it for him. According to a spokesman for Ohtani, Shohei's involvement initially was described as aiding his translator, that Ohtani transferred funds to cover Mizuhara's gambling debts of roughly $4.5 million. The money didn't go directly to Mizuhara because Ohtani didn't trust him not to gamble it away. Before the interview with ESPN with the translator, though, before it was published, but after it was given, the spokesman disavowed the translator's account, which matched the original statement from the spokespeople, and Ohtani's lawyers issued a statement saying, hey, Ohtani had that this was stolen. So the organization was confused. Again, we're going through the TikTok here, the timeline. After all this happened, nobody wants to comment. And as far as the next steps go, this blows me away. This is a new revelation. According to a league source, Major League Baseball hasn't been contacted by prosecutors. The Players Association has declined comment. Ohtani's agent has declined comment. And that's all understandable. But according to the league source, there is no imminent or pending investigation from Major League Baseball when regarding this incident.
Come on.
Come on.
Right.
It is your international superstar involved somehow, some way, perhaps innocently, in what is being laid out as a possible federal crime right. involving gambling.
Which, if we go to the history of sports controversies, is that the biggest still? Black Sox, yeah. Pete Rose.
Black Sox.
Or cheating in some form of way.
Yes.
Drug, you know, steroids.
Yes.
And, you know, the difference, well, the Black Sox was, was in progress. Pete Rose was doing it in progress, but he was a manager.
Yes.
This is, and it's not, you know, sometimes you're, oh, it was kind of a bench guy or bullpen, whatever it is, whatever sport, like an end of the bench, someone in the rotation. This is the biggest name of the sport. It needs to be investigated. And I hope for his sake it is nothing.
Right.
But what if it is?
We need to know that it isn't.
Right.
Now, according to everyone so far, there were no bets on baseball.
Mm-hmm.
This is all international soccer and whatever. And by the way, you can make the argument that they should be able to do whatever the hell they want yeah. as long as it's not baseball. Right. I'm not immune to that.
Right.
And of course, this folds in all the partnerships that all these leagues now are completely in bed with gambling. 100% in bed with gambling. And you have all kinds of things going on in sports that I think are boring to the person that watches sports, but are really, really interesting developments as to where sports is leading. For example, you may have heard that Alex Rodriguez and his partner, they lost their funding to purchase the rest of the Minnesota Timberwolves from their former owner, $300 million. They lost their funding at the last minute, and that funding was replaced now by a company called Dial Capital. Now, if that doesn't mean anything to you, I don't blame you. But Dial Capital is also a major investor in the Sacramento Kings. They're a private equity firm. The NBA, just a few years back, a bunch of the minority owners of the Kings sold. They sold to Dial Capital. The Kings and I think the Suns were the first two teams the NBA allowed to take on private equity investors. And now that's spreading around. I believe there's a limit of five, but now you have private equity firms taking big chunks out of NBA teams. And on the surface, it's like, well, why? Who cares? Well, right. You don't have individuals. You have investment firms. Different things can happen, especially if those investment firms go under, if there's issues, if there's fraud, if there's this, if there's that. It's a whole different ballgame in how investing is being done. And we're talking about the world of money in sports. So now you have betting everywhere. We talked earlier with Kelly about how the NBA League Pass is now going to have live betting on the site, on the phone. And now you have the, and Jason, I'm so glad you brought it up. The biggest scandal, arguably, in sports history is the Black Sox scandal. The Black Sox scandal is directly why, because baseball felt like they were in trouble and the sport may, in fact, go, public confidence is gone. The sport may go under. So the owners got together and did something that rich men, especially back then, never, ever, ever would do. They said, hey, we need to voluntarily give somebody absolute power that does not answer to us in any shape or form, that has the ability to fine us, suspend us, and make unilateral decisions in baseball that we can't overrule, and we need to give that power to one man. They did that. That's how desperate they were, and that man was Kennesaw Mountain Landis, who was a judge who had nothing to do with any of them, and he came in, and that established the office of the commissioner of baseball, and that tradition continued through Ford Frick, through Peter Ueberroth, through Bart Giamatti, through Faye Vincent, and then to the sound of nothing, you went from that to, oh, okay, now we're going to have an owner be the commissioner in Bud Selig and future commissioners, in this case just one, Rob Manfred, who's on his way out in a couple years. Now they give way to agents of the front office who, in effect, work for the owners. Now we've seen that just go. Shoeless Joe Jackson is not in the Hall of Fame because he allegedly was part of the scandal. Shoeless right. Joe Jackson was illiterate. Shoeless Joe Jackson, the proof they had on him was that there was an X on an agreement. Shoeless Joe Jackson batted, I think, 346 in that series and was the best player for the White Sox, and he was never allowed in the Hall of Fame. The guy had to go down to rando minor league teams, change his name to finish out his career because he loved the sport of baseball, and the proof they had on him was a guy who could not read and an X on a contract when his stats were the best on the team, and he never got in. He's dead. You can't rectify that. Pete Rose is never going to get in. I'm not saying he should or shouldn't, but that's never going to happen. That's why this is important.
Absolutely.
It sets a standard, or it continues a standard, or it gets rid of the standards we've had. So much, much, much more on that. What better time when you're talking about all of this to segue right into chicken wings? And that's exactly what I'm going to do with my good friends at Fire Wings. 21 different flavors to choose from. By the way, 1-800-GAMBLER. Thought I'd throw that out there. Hey, don't know if you know this or not, but you got a lot of basketball going on today. A lot of basketball. Pro, not pro. Got to be very careful when we have this conversation here. Lawyers get on me. But I can say there's a lot of basketball. And what better? What goes better with basketball or really any sport where you're just, who wants to cook tonight? You don't want to cook. Go to Fire Wings. Now, it's 8:46 in the morning, but you know what? Whenever you get home, on the way home, you can just, you know when you're going to be next to a Fire Wings. Use your map. And you can set it up to go in there, show the card you reserved it with, and just pick up your bag of wings. Or your bag of sandwiches, or your bag of ramen, seasoned fries, or all of it. Locally owned and operated, they're the best in the world, in my opinion. Go to firewings.com, find the location nearest you. Tell them Carmichael Dave sent you. Hey, Fire Wings, just wing it. We will take a break when we come back. Final segment of the hour, who's hot, who's not. We'll recap Three in the Key from last night. And we'll get a new Three in the Key because it's back-to-back Kings-Wizards. We'll do all that on your home of the Kings. Sacktown Sports.
What's hot?
Yeah, hot. Real hot.
And what's not?
It's not good.
Brought to you by American Energy Heating and Air, Sacramento's complete heating and cooling company and second opinion partner.
I got a question.
I got a question.
What is it?
Who's hot? Christopher Lord.
Grayson Allen.
Grayson Allen.
He scored 32 points in the Suns' 115-102 win over the Philadelphia 76ers. Crazy. He was 9 of 15 from the three-point line.
What did I see? What was the stat I saw? Grayson Allen now has, like, I think that's like his fourth, fifth, sixth game with 9 or more three-pointers. He's the only player not named Steph, Clay, Damian Lillard, or James Harden, who's done that before. He's now in that category with those four guys. And I really wanted the Kings to draft him. I'm going to admit that. Like, he's got that. Remember out of Duke, he was like the dirty.
Yeah. Yeah. He had a pretty bad label then.
He's basically like he's having a very, I hate to stereotype here, you know, the whole Duke thing. He very much reminds me of like a J.J. Redick type, mm-hmm. just a sharpshooter type of dude, Duncan Robinson, guy that just, he's going to have a nice long career, help out a few teams, probably win a ring or two.
I don't know about that part.
I mean, just as a part of a team. Yeah. I'm not saying he's going to lead anyone to a championship. All right, well, who's not then?
Kawhi Leonard.
Oh, well, it doesn't
for
help.
For other reasons.
Right, exactly. Why
not?
He did
score 24 points in the Clippers' 116-103 win over the Blazers last night, but he was 0-1 when guarded by James Harden. Harden isn't even that good of a defender.
That's the thing. James Harden is one of the most Olay defenders in the history of the league, and Kawhi Leonard has never, well, I can't say that, I guess, but in Kawhi Leonard's Clippers career this year, he has never scored when defended by James Harden. That's a fact.
That is facts. We can prove it.
If you missed it, go online. Feel free. Yes, James Harden's on the Clippers, too.
It was one of those things when I first saw it, I'm like, okay, this is like an angle. I'm seeing something wrong.
Right.
Nope. And they like showed it in replay.
They showed
right
it
in the pocket.
Harden's got the ball top of the key. Dishes off. You missed Jason Ross doing the play-by-play earlier. Dishes off to James Harden, or to Kawhi Leonard in the corner. And then immediately closes out on his own teammate, jumps and tries to block the shot. And then after the game was like, oh, I'm just trying to, you know, help the vibes.
Yeah. We're in a cloud. We need a little pick-me-up.
Yeah, and you know when you want to make a funny joke and get everybody to laugh, you know who's the best guy to pull that on? Kawhi Leonard. Yeah. Because he's known. It's like, can you imagine? It's like being a stand-up comedian and, like, your entire audience is consist of Kawhi Leonard, Tim Duncan, and Keegan Murray. I don't care who you are. You can be Eddie Murphy, Delirious, Raw, Robin Williams in his prime, George Carlin. Imagine having that in your audience. Imagine an audience of Keegan Murray, Kawhi Leonard, and Tim Duncan.
Keegan would hide.
He would hide behind someone.
Yeah.
And like you could tell the best joke ever and you know it would kill because you get like a and that's like brought the
that's
house.
That's funny.
That's yeah. You've got wiggle. 3 in the key last night. Let's see how smart or dumb we were.
We were good.
Oh, were we? Well, we know the Kings were good. But how good were we, Jason, or is it Hassan?
Yes.
Ross.
We asked, question one, Keon Ellis, the difference maker. We asked for his steals and blocks. Davey said 3-3.
Okay.
I said 3-1. Chris said 2-3. Keon had 4 steals and 1 block.
Oh, so a total of 5. We were pretty close.
Yep. We asked for the Monk dunks Monk threes.
Monk threes.
He had 2 dunks, including a fantastic dunk.
It really was.
And he had... Oh, only 1 made 3.
Ah.
So the correct answer would be 2-1. Dave, you had 2-4. I had 0-3.
Oh. Chris had, he always saves that for home.
He said 2-4.
I think you get it because you get the none of us were right, but you get the combined 3. You said 0-3 and he had 2-1.
Okay.
I feel like you get like a half point.
We were better on our random stat.
Let's go.
Dave, your random stat came out of nowhere. You said JaVale McGee would have a dunk. It got two thumbs down because Malik heard that. He's like, I was hoping Dave would be wrong.
Malik, longtime listener, yeah. No time caller.
Yes. I said there would be double figures for Chris Duarte. Duarte scored 14 points.
Duarte arguably had like his best offensive game with the Kings. He had, you said he had what, 14?
Yeah, 5 of 6 shooting, 2 of 3 from the 3-point line, 2 of 2 from the line, 5 boards, 2 assists.
How many minutes?
In 19.
Yeah, 14 points in 19 minutes on 5 assists.
Yeah, more.
5 boards, too. Like you said, that, let's go. More like he's going to do it, Arte.
What? Okay. And then Chris said the Kings would go wire to wire. And
they so trailed, stupid.
I know. They trailed by 1 point for like 1 second.
I don't even remember that.
Yeah.
Because then they start out as like 6-0, 9-3.
I think it got to 22-21 in the first quarter.
Yeah.
All right, re-rack it then. We got a game tonight. Kings, Wizards. Or do you want to save it? Do we need to break? Okay, let's break.
Savesies.
Let's savesies. We'll take a break. We'll come back. Tournament's about to start here in 15 minutes. But we got some numbers Jason Ross put together for you, and we'll share. Also, we'll play a game of What's the Line for tonight? Don't peek, Kings and Wizards. We'll do all that next.